Welcome to the Connect Community Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. We're so glad to have you with us today. If you're ever in our area, come see us in person. We hope today's message inspires you and helps you live better.
We've been on a journey following Jesus in his last days, maybe even last hours, in his ministry before his death and resurrection. First week we talked about a dinner he had in Bethany. Last week we talked about the Last Supper. And now we're going to go to the next event that happened. We're not covering every single one of them. It would take longer than 5 weeks for us to do that. But we're pausing on a few key moments that Jesus had, and we're extracting some life lessons from it. So a calling to obedience is the title of the message today. And let me ask you this question. How open are you to doing things you don't want to do on a day-to-day basis? I'm not talking about anything terrible. I'm not talking about anything life-threatening. I'm not talking about anything other than normal, sometimes even good things that you simply don't want to do. How open are you to doing things you don't want to do? Here's something I share from my experience, that this idea, and you will relate to this, this idea of doing things we don't want to do is tested at every level of every relationship. Have you noticed that? If you have friends, friends find their common ground on what you can do together, whether it's food, entertainment, hobbies. And the older you get, the more friendship gets dictated by your preferences. I don't know if you've noticed that. See, when you're young, your friends introduce you to things. Because you haven't experienced a lot of things. You want to experience things. So you're young, you meet somebody, your friend asks you, have you ever gone ice skating? And you say, no, I haven't been yet. Let's go on Friday. So on Friday, you're out there sliding from ledge to ledge, holding on the little cone, trying not to fall and break a bone. That rhymed. Maybe I could drop some lines here, huh? Maybe your friend asks you, have you ever had Mexican food? And you say, no. And then next day, you're wearing a sombrero because you loved it so much. But as you get older, things change. As you get older, when you meet people, it's more about what you can do together. In fact, if you meet an adult person who just made a friend, and you ask them, hey, how did you guys meet? The conversation will go something like this. Well, I'm a golfer. So I went in for a round of golf, and we got paired up together, and we kind of stayed in touch. Or it'll go something like, you know, I joined this running group and we got connected, exchanged numbers, and now we're friends. Or, you know, I used to go to the gym always on the same time and we kept running into each other and then we connected and now we're friends. There's always a common interest that a long life you kind of bumped into this person together and you became friends. Because the more we grow, the more we get set in our ways. Isn't that true? And the more intimate our relationship gets, however, the more you'll be pressed, the more you'll be presented with things that you don't want to do. Like where to eat, what show to watch, what movies to go to. And marriage is a great example of that, because when you enter into marriage, which is a way more intimate relationship, you merge your lives together. Questions of where you will live, how you will live, how you will organize your life. What kind of silverware are you going to wear? Are you going to use? Where are the cups and the plates going to go in the kitchen? You go from questions like that to where are you going to go on vacation? Everything in between. There are many things that you wouldn't necessarily want to do, but you open your heart and your mind to do them because you want to be together. And then when parenting comes, that goes to the next level. Isn't that true? The dads in the room will agree with me that when you start a family, you begin to do a lot more things you don't want to do. A lot more things you don't want to do. Or at least things that you wouldn't be your first choice. Moms experience that too. Any couple with young children will learn this quickly. Your childless friends don't fully understand your life now. They don't. They can't. Because you didn't understand your life now before you had kids. How is it that a couple who was very open and willing to hang out late at night now just wants to stay in? How is that possible? Do they still want to go out? Yes. Do they choose to stay in over going out? Yes. Do they do that because they have to or because they want to? Both. They want to, but they also have to, even though they still want to go out, because your want when you become a parent is no longer linear. It's no longer a simple thing. It's not based on fun. It's not based on preference. It's not based on what you want. It's not based on some of those more selfish desires. It's not based on your whims. Your want is now based on legacy. It's based on family. On values. And there's a big difference between getting together late at night, sipping on margaritas, talking about the weather, or anything else. Between that and raising someone who came from your flesh and your bones. Someone who has your DNA in their body. Someone who will stay here after you're gone and will inherit not only your family name, your family traditions, but also everything that you own. They will carry on your life. There's a big difference between those two. But the truth is this, it doesn't matter in what season of life you find yourself, at what level of relationship you find yourself, the idea of doing things we don't want to do always confronts us. It's always something that confronts us. You can be a high school or college student in the room, or you can be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Doing what you don't want to do doesn't come naturally. It's not something that we choose as our first option. It doesn't always come easy. And what we face today is a world that is increasingly less willing, increasingly less malleable, increasingly less devoted, and less interested in anything other than themselves. People want what they want for themselves. Have you noticed that? It used to be noble to live like the good, the greater good precedes your own good. It used to be noble to have that principle, but we have flipped those values. In fact, today, the main qualifier for what we call greater good has to include that which pleases me. If it doesn't work for me, it's not the greater good. We want to be catered to. We want to be right. And to bring to the context of our series and some of the passages we have shared, we much prefer to receive the expensive perfume we talked about. We much prefer to receive the gift, to receive the offering, like Mary offered Jesus, than to offer it to someone else or to offer it to God. We much rather have our feet washed and be undisturbed than to have to serve others and wash their feet, like we spoke last week. We'd much rather do that. See, the common attitude today is, I don't want to wash anyone's feet. That's gross. Plus, everything else in their life is clean. Why would I focus on their feet? I just focus on everything else. It's kind of rude to focus on their feet. Why bother with the dirty part? How about we give them some socks? They can cover the dirty feet. We don't have to wash it or bother with it. It's a win-win. It's out of sight, out of mind. We don't make them uncomfortable. And that's how many Christians today interpret grace. This is how people see grace these days. We went from defining grace as God's unmerited favor, cleansing us from sin, saving us from death, to defining grace as something that means not allowing yourself to even bother with someone else's sin. Even bother with someone else's problem. That's their problem. Their dirty feet is their thing. We have turned grace into tolerance. According to that grace, nobody's feet need washing at all. In fact, the idea that you should wash their feet is the problem. It's your problem that you think that they need to wash their feet. You should be able to tolerate their feet. That's what Christians do. We're supposed to be completely comfortable, completely comfortable, dragging all the junk from anywhere out in the streets, anywhere people have been through, they'd be comfortable with them, dragging that into their house, dragging into their personal spaces, so to speak, and offer no solution, no help. But friends, grace is not tolerance. Grace is forgiveness. It's much deeper. It's much more profound. Grace is life-changing. Grace is not tolerance. Grace is salvation from that which is deadly. Salvation from that which can cause your feet to be so diseased and so terrible that you are paralyzed in life. See, that's really the lesson that Jesus was giving the disciples. When people come to you, wash their feet, make their lives better. Introduce them to salvation so that they can keep moving and keep going. And the very reason why we need the grace of God is because when we are apart from God, when we don't have a relationship with Almighty God, our nature descends toward death. That's our natural progression, our natural gravitational pull, so to speak. See, good and evil can overlap so much in our mind that we can almost not separate them. It's hard to separate them. And it happens every day. You want to prosper. You want to care for your family. But you get caught up in greed and you end up sacrificing your family for the sake of prosperity. You want to find someone to love. You want to have a real and true experience of unconditional love. But you get caught up in lust. You get caught up in desire. And you end up using that person to get your fix. They become a mechanism. They become an accessory to satisfy your own ambition. You want to be successful. And the story you tell yourself is, I'm going to be successful so I can help others. But instead of helping others, you get caught up in the process of using people, using your connections, using people's talents to promote yourself, to get yourself what you want, even though it may cost that relationship. We are all tempted with these possibilities, and sometimes it's hard to see the line and it's hard to reconcile. But when we connect to God, something changes. When we connect to God, when the life of Jesus enters our soul, another part of you comes alive. That's the godly you. The you that God dreamed of. The you that God designed. The you that God fashioned. And that part of you has the same personality. It has the same talents. It lives in the same body that you do. However, when you give yourself to God, your values, your character, your intention begins to be shaped and directed by this new nature. And you find that that's the you that you should be all along. That's the true, real you that comes alive. The nature of the everlasting life. Now here's what we realize and we come to face and have to come to grasps with. Is the fact that as long as you live on this earth, the old nature will still show up sometimes. It will rear its ugly head. And we live in this tension where the old pulls you in and the opposite direction of the new you. And Jesus, even though he never sinned, He was tempted like you and I in every single way, including in this area. Including in the area of having to do something that he did not want to do. It was after he had his supper with his disciples, after washing his disciples' feet and teaching them this beautiful lesson on grace. Jesus himself was tested on that very lesson about serving others and doing what he doesn't want to do. We see it in Mark chapter 14, verse 32 through 42. This is the passage that we're focusing on in the next few minutes. And they went to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be greatly distressed and troubled. And he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch." And going a little farther, he fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." And he came and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And again, he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again, he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. And he came a third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? It is enough. The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See my betrayer at hand." Here's what I love about this story. Whenever we need a perfect model of obedience, whenever we need a perfect model of submission, we don't have to look down. We don't look to our side. We look up to our Savior. We look to God. Most of us think obedience is a lower quality. Most of us think of obedience as a characteristic of the weak, of the fragile. But that's wrong, because obedience is a divine quality. Jesus obeyed. The one we serve, the one we follow, he himself showed us how to obey. And obedience is a calling. In fact, if you're taking notes, that's something you should write down. Obedience is a calling. There's no fruitful relationship with God apart from obedience. If you're not a Christian and God is not a part of your life, you need to know this today, that to connect to God requires obedience. But most of us think of obedience as a personality trait. See, we think of obedience as someone who is meek, someone who does what other people ask, someone who follows rules, that person that is obedient. And you think, if I'm going to be obedient, I have to be like that. And that's hard, because that might not be you. That's not a pleasant picture if you're not naturally like that. But that's not really what obedience is. It's not a personality trait. Obedience is not passive. Obedience is not static. Obedience is action. Obedience means movement. Obedience means you're taking steps. Obedience is about doing. It's about action. That's why obedience is a calling. Listen to what Peter wrote in his first letter. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 22 says, "Having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth for a sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart." The way that we're transformed and changed is through acting and through being obedient. And I want to share 3 callings of obedience that are essential for every single one of us to live this new life that Jesus has called us to live. The new life that is supposed to spring up in us. The life that we are called and meant to live. Number one, obedience to God calls us to surrender our sorrow. If you pay attention to Jesus' prayer and his time in the Gethsemane, you'll notice that when Jesus reveals to his friends that his soul is sorrowful, he didn't start by complaining about his fate. Did you notice that? He didn't complain. He didn't go to them and say, "You're not going to guess what's happening right now." You know that Judas guy? I got to tell you, he's up to something. Guys, you're not going to believe it. Did you know that he just sold me out? He didn't do that. When Jesus was sorrowful, the first thing he did was bring his sorrows to God. But notice how he prayed. He said, "Father, all things are possible to you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." There's something about obedience that recognizes that our will is not the best. I don't know if you've ever come to situations where you realize later that your will wasn't the best. That usually involves regret. And if you have any kind of regret in your life, that's the realization you have. Oh, I thought I was doing the right thing. And there's something about obedience that recognizes that. See, when you answer the call to obedience, you choose to submit your will to that which you are obeying. That's what you're doing. So when parents, going back to the parent analogy, when parents say that parenting is hard, it's not parenting necessarily that is hard. It's not parenting per se. It's the obedience to parenting that is hard. Because you know that you have to submit your life and your will to that which is required of you. If you want to be a competent parent, that's what you have to do. And the reason why parents with young children are no longer seeing out late, sipping your margaritas, talking about the weather or whatever else, is because they have realized that something else in their lives is greater than their own will. They have submitted their will to that. So you have your will and you have things you want to do. Sure, sometimes you want to take a break, but what you want the most is to be an apt parent. So you obey. The same principle happens when we have a revelation of the presence of the divine in our lives. We're not forced to obey. We're not forced to change our lives. We submit our smaller desires, our singular desires. We submit our once in a while desires to the supreme desire, which is to obey God's will, to follow God's will. That becomes our supreme desire. And that's what Jesus is doing here. Jesus is saying, "God, I don't want to do this. Remove this cup from me, please. God, I don't want to do this. This is hard. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I don't want to do it. Can you please not cause me to have to go through this? I don't want to be crucified. I don't want to die an innocent man. But not my will, your will. Here's what I want. I want your will more than I want my will." Number two, obedience calls us to trust God with our future. Trust God with our future. See, many times we fail to obey, not because we lack the courage, but because we lack trust. And we need trust. So you have courage to do it. You have a vision to do it. You have the resources to take the step. And even you're even confident in your ability to take that step of faith. But you lack trust. Maybe because you've been burned before. Maybe because you've had disappointments before. Here's a passage to encourage you. Psalm 37 verses 3 to 5 say this: "Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust him, and he will act." He will act. Obedience to God is the best path to reach the life we are meant to live. It's our best path. We don't know where our will ultimately leads. We don't know where our will ultimately lead. But what we learn from this scripture, from this ancient writing, is that people have trusted God for thousands of years. They have trusted God with their lives. And this has been consistent and true. If we commit our ways to the Lord, if we trust Him, He will act. If we choose to delight ourselves in Him above all else, He will give us the desire of our hearts. He will. And I'm proof of that. I am proof of that. Do you think that I have the clout on my own to pull off a wife like Alini? He agrees with that. She's way out of my league. Way out of my league. And that's the dream of every husband. Do you think that I have the capacity to come up with ideas that have helped so many people on my own? I've given up trying to impress people a long time ago. I gave it up. The closer you get to me, the more you'll realize this. I owe everything in my life to the goodness of God. Everything. My number one job every day, my number one job is to wake up and to obey God. It's to wake up and to delight myself in Him. It's to wake up and to trust Him. That's my number one job. It is out of that that everything else flows. It's out of that that I operate as a husband. It's out of that that I operate as a dad, as a leader, as a pastor. It's out of that. And even at that, I'm not perfect. Even at that, I need God's grace. Even at that, I need Jesus to come and wash my feet quite often. Even at that, I need, Lord, please align my heart. But my life agrees with the psalmist. I have dwelt in the land of faithfulness. God has given me the desires of my heart, and He has acted on my behalf. See, when we look at Jesus' life and what He was doing here in this prayer, Jesus was with His friends. He loved His friends. But He didn't trust His friends with His destiny. He didn't trust His friends with His future. He trusted His friend, He trusted God with that. You had to trust God. They fell asleep on Him. And I want to say the same to you. See, your destiny is not in your boss's hands. So don't get upset if your boss falls asleep on you. Trust God. Your destiny is not in your parents' hands, so don't be disappointed if your parents fall asleep on you. It's not in your spouse's hand or anyone else's hands. Your destiny is in God's hands. So trust Him. Trust Him with your tomorrow. Number three is this. Obedience to God calls us to face our enemies. This profound time of prayer and agony and suffering that Jesus had in God's presence didn't end with deliverance. It ended with Him facing His enemy. Because obedience to God calls us to face our enemies. And notice how Jesus followed up His prayer moment. He looked at His disciples as He said, "Rise, because the Son of Man has to be delivered in the hands of His enemies, in the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. My betrayer is at hand." Here's what I noticed in this passage. Jesus wasn't disappointed at God, even though He didn't get His will. He didn't say, "Oh, I guess this prayer thing didn't work. Christianity didn't really work for my life. Jesus Christ." He didn't say that. "I prayed, God didn't answer me. I guess it didn't work." No. Jesus realized that God answered Jesus' prayer with the opposite of what He wanted. And what did Jesus do? He faced His enemy. See, for many of you, this is the hardest part. See, you're fine with dealing with your sorrow. You can pour your sorrow before God like a glass of spoiled milk. You just let him have it. You're okay with having faith to trust God, but facing your enemy, that's the hardest part. Because facing your enemy means confronting things you've been avoiding for a while. You know, when Jesus would heal people early in his ministry, many times he would tell them, hey, don't tell anybody that I've done this for you, because my hour has not come yet. He always knew that he was going to have to face this moment. And in a way, he was saying, hey, it's not time yet. So, shh. Because if they find out, they're going to kill me. So don't let anybody know that I've healed you. Jesus said that so many times until the last moment when he asked God, God, please don't let my hour come. I don't want to do this. Take it away from me. He wasn't avoiding it. He just didn't want it. And maybe that's you today. You know, maybe you've been telling yourself, my hour to face my enemy has not come yet. My hour to face this thing that I know I have to face, to confront the situation, has not come yet. I want to put it off just a little bit longer. I want to put it off just a few more days. My hour has not come yet. But my friend, at some point, obedience will call you to face your enemy, to face that which is trying to destroy you, to face that which rises itself against you and tries to destroy your life. My challenge to you today is to answer the call of obedience, to surrender your sorrows and pour them before God, to trust God with your future, and to know that He is able to face your enemies with courage. Because just as Jesus was betrayed, just as Jesus was arrested, just as he was wrongly convicted and carried his cross and died, we face enemies every day. We will face enemies that will rise against us. We will be called by God Himself to carry our own cross. We will be called by obedience to die to ourselves. But remember, it's not the end. There is life more abundantly on the other side. Obedience is not limiting or regressing. Obedience is a calling to go beyond your own limits, to reach out beyond your own limits, and to enter into God's divine life and the divine plan for you. And I believe this. I believe if you answer the call to obedience, you will overcome every obstacle. You'll be able to surrender every sorrow. You'll be able to trust God with your future and see the hand of God in your life. And you will be able to face your enemies. And you will defeat your enemies by the power of God. And you will experience the everlasting life of God that comes through honoring His will and choosing His unmatching will for your life. Do you receive it this morning? Amen. I love you so much.
Thank you for listening today. If you have a prayer request, a question about faith, or would like to find out more information, visit us at connectcommunity.org. Don't forget to subscribe and share. See you next time.